Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing how AI can hurt your finances, joke cryptocurrencies, and when YOLO is a good thing.
Yeah, dude, we've talked about YOLO before, how oftentimes it's a bad thing, but we're going to talk about today how it's a good thing, and we've got several other stories that we want to get to this week that we came across for our Friday flight. How do I sound, by the way? Do I sound a little stopped
great.
Up? Dude, the allergies have been destroying me. I just cleared my throat like 1,000 times before we hit record here. I took a couple of hits of my nose spray so I can actually breathe now, but I still got a bunch of junk in my throat, so hopefully we can make it through this one, man.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, so you've got a note here about free mulch. What's the story here?
All right, so Justin in our Facebook group, he recently recommended to folks to check out this website, ChipDrop, and I hadn't heard of it, but I was like, all right, let me see what this site has to offer. And basically, it's a site where arborists can drop off like wood chips or logs at your house, and you don't pay a dime. It's the kind of stuff that they need to get rid of, right? But if you're looking for mulch for the front yard or some logs for splitting so that you've got wood for your wood-burning stove next winter.
That sounds like me, dude.
This is a place to get it from.
Yeah. Did we not talk about this on the show? Our friend Colin, he tried this out last year. And the only thing, like he did the giant wood deposit. And so he got a bunch of huge rounds that were cut. But you have to be willing to accept a ton of it.
Like that's yeah, there's like no limit. You can't be like, can you stop at this amount? Like they can unload so much.
Yes, and the same thing with mulch. If they pull up, I mean, they're just going to dump like a buttload of mulch on your driveway, and you might have, I mean, literally this massive pile that you're going to have to get your friends to haul off in their wheelbarrows, spread it all around your backyard. You're going to have like twice as many beds as maybe you thought you were going to have.
I was going to say you might want to do it with your neighbors and not try to do it solo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I did not know that they actually do rounds, you know, like sections from a tree cut. And so I don't have a need for it right now. I've got a good stockpile. But dude, yeah, sometime this summer, I'm going to download that app, make sure that I've got enough wood lined up for me to get splitting next fall for the wood stove. I just hope they don't drop off these. Like, seriously, he had some that were so big, he had to go out and buy like some special wedges in order to actually split these things. I mean, they're like the bottom section, I guess, of a tree where it took some serious muscle to split those apart. But he was able to do that, and now he has plenty of wood on hand.
Yeah, beggars can't be choosers on ChipDrop.
Yes.
but some folks, yeah, might find that interesting. We'll link to it in the show notes. Yeah.
Dude, and I love, too, that it's like you're making use of waste, right? Like, this, essentially, for the arborist, this is something that, I mean, I assume they have to get rid of, and they have to pay to get rid of it if they don't have somebody that they can take it to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if they're just going to take it to the dump, keeps it out of the landfills. And when so many of us go to a hardware store to buy mulch, it just seems like the perfect system.
For like $3 for a tiny bag.
Yes, exactly. As opposed to just an endless supply for you and all of your neighbors.
Exactly. Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
I love it.
All right, well, let's get on to the stories we found interesting this week, our Friday flight. And Matt, the first story I wanted to touch on, I thought this was interesting. The New York Times had an interesting article, and they wrote about what they called the YOLO economy. And I'm going to define this term again just for our listeners who don't know what YOLO means. You only live once. And YOLO is not our favorite acronym because it often means that people are living for today, right? You only live once. Like, go ahead, blow it out, spend as much as you can, don't even think about the future at all. And that's not a great mentality, right? That could lead you to spending all of what you make, or maybe even more. But then one little emergency comes along and it messes you up in a big way. That kind of YOLO is not good. So I thought, Matt, when I clicked on this headline, I was like, this is going to irritate me. I'm not going to dig the YOLO economy that the New York Times is profiling. But actually, it did the opposite because it detailed people who are making significant changes to their lives because their priorities have shifted because of the pandemic. And that, I thought, was something that you and I could get behind. It seemed like people were making really positive steps. They weren't going on a YOLO spending binge necessarily. What they were doing was shaking things up about what their day-to-day lives looked like, and in large part because of the impact that COVID had on them.
Yeah, using YOLO to justify poor spending, that's a bad idea. But using YOLO to kind of re-examine your life and how it is that you're spending your time is, yeah, like you said, something we can totally get behind. And we feel that you should be making these kind of changes in your life, you know, because of something like the pandemic. You know, like through gosh, you know, all the awfulness of it, there is a silver lining, and that's that many of us can and probably should be shaking things up somehow, right? If we don't learn something about ourselves and our priorities, then this would be a wasted opportunity that we've lived through the, you know, over the past year. A few recent surveys show that somewhere between like 25 and 40% of folks are thinking about leaving their job this year, about switching it up. And that's okay. We feel that that's healthy. And so we want to encourage folks to not live the YOLO life where you don't plan for your future, but do live the YOLO life in the sense that you only have one life to live, and, you know, getting out of maybe a stressful work situation, even accepting less pay, this can be the right move if it means that you're able to enjoy your life more and spend more time with the folks that, that matter most to you.
Yeah, one of the people profiled in that article was a lawyer who's working way too many hours, and he ended up ditching that job and going to work for a neighborhood firm, essentially. And he was
His next door neighbor.
Yeah, literally his neighbor, yeah. And he's like, I can spend more time with my wife and my dog now, and this is great. And so, yeah, those are the kind of decisions we think are good decisions. Money is not everything. You really do only live once. And so don't live for today alone, right? We want you to plan accordingly. But making changes based on how this year went and based on the new priorities that you have is a good thing. All right, Matt, let's talk about financial literacy for a second. You know, you and I are big proponents of financial literacy. We feel like financial education in this country is sorely lacking, but it looks like there might be more financial literacy help on the way. And I hope so. Again, in the New York Times, they ran an article, and it turns out that almost half of states in the U.S. are weighing the prospect of increased financial education in schools. Like, there are bills on the table that might come to pass. How many? That's anyone's guess. Local politics, you never know what's going to happen there. But one thing is clear, kids are being done a massive disservice these days by not being taught essentially anything about personal finance during the years that they spend in school. They learn a lot of things that they're never going to use again, but one of the things that they're going to use essentially every day, they hear nothing about, and that's a big problem. And we just wanted to point out, you can listen to episode 98, where we talked to Dan LaSalle. He's been really inspirational to us in his financial literacy endeavors. And then, two, if you're just looking for a resource to point people to, whether it's young people or adults, there's a YouTube channel called moneycoach.io. We'll link to their website, but they have great videos that are simple to understand, that are pretty short, that have already helped and can continue to help a lot of people learn about the basics of personal finance for free.
That's right, dude. Let's talk about investing. Specifically, let's talk about ESG funds, which stands for Environmental Social Governance Funds. And Jason, I don't know how to say his last name, Zweig?
That's right, yeah.
that's how I'd say it, with the Wall Street Journal. He took socially conscious investing to task this week. You know, we've talked about responsible investing on the show a few times, and I got to say, we agree with Mr. Zweig's take. And it's not that socially responsible investing is a bad thing, because the desire for folks to invest in companies that don't pollute the planet in a major way, or companies, you know, who have a meaningful mission, like, that's a great thing. But ESG funds have just different ways of differentiating which companies they'll include in their sustainable funds. Basically, just because a fund is labeled ESG or quote unquote sustainable, that doesn't mean that it actually is. It's up to the different fund managers to decide what goes in that ESG fund. There aren't any standards, you know, essentially it's kind of like beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and the beholder here is the fund manager, and it's up to them to decide what is and what isn't going to be included as part of their ESG fund. And this actually makes me think of, so you mentioned chip drop at the beginning of the episode. It makes me think back to when I was considering buying some wood from some local sellers of firewood. And what they're selling is a cord, quote unquote, a cord of wood. But here's the thing. It's up to them to decide what a cord of wood is, because they're just piling in the back of their truck.
I always wondered what a cord actually equates to. And I know that there's like an actual definition, but not everybody, you know.
So the actual definition, yeah, a face cord. And that means that it's a stack of wood that's split, that's 4 feet high by 8 feet wide, right? So that's a face cord. But again, when it comes to like what these guys are going to come to your house and, you know, if some of them will do like the delivery thing, and they're just going to unload wood and they basically stop when they want to. And so that, I feel like that's an instance where it's just like, this isn't quite a cord of wood, man, or hey, this is more, you know, thank you so much. In the same way, I feel like it's true with ESG funds. It's like, is this truly an ESG fund? Like, is this good for the environment, even though it's labeled as such?
Well, it's same thing with like terms like artisan and handcrafted. You know, there's someone in Atlanta
so
selling
true.
Artisan wood, and you're like, well, what does that mean?
What does that mean, dude?
Or like, you know, certain liquors are handcrafted, and it's like, at what point does a hand enter the process, and when is it considered handcrafted versus like purely made by machines? And that is also in the eye of the beholder in many instances.
Totally true.
But these funds, like, they're rising in popularity right now. But I guess the question is, like, should a company like Facebook be included in a sustainable fund, right? Like, different fund managers have different takes on that. Some would leave them out completely, and some would say, yeah, they belong in my ESG fund at least. What about Coinbase, which just had their IPO last week? There are serious concerns about the electricity waste and the environmental impact of Bitcoin mining. And of course, you know, a company like Coinbase might be contributing to some of that. So, you know, we wouldn't say to avoid these funds altogether, but do make sure that the fund you're participating in is doing a good job of vetting the companies that they invest in, because otherwise you might just be paying a higher fee without getting that intended payoff.
Yeah. And realize too, that even if they're doing a good job vetting, it's still kind of up to you to figure out, like, okay, well, what companies are they including? Because your definition of a socially conscious fund might be very different than that of the manager over at BlackRock, right?
Right.
And dude, you know, actually, since you just brought up crypto, it is worth mentioning that articles touting cryptocurrency as mainstream were all over the place this week. And the joke cryptocurrency, Dogecoin, is that how you...
I think so.
These are things that I read more about than I talk about because, I mean, Dogecoin has no place in my life, except for when we talk about it here on the show. But I read about it more than I talk about it in my real life. But, we saw Dogecoin skyrocket in value last weekend, and it was, for a moment, it was worth more than companies that have been around for decades, almost hundreds of years now at this point, like Ford. Well, Ford's been around, but Roku hasn't, but they're more valuable than Roku. Carvana, Walgreens, Kimberly-Clark, they're the company that likely makes the toilet paper that you use. But Dogecoin is now falling significantly, and while blockchain technology, like, we feel that's going to have many uses in the future. And crypto itself might be a meaningful store of value like gold, or even a medium of exchange in the future once it is a little less volatile. We would recommend for folks to be careful putting too much of your money in this volatile space. Which coins will be winners? Which coins will lose out? It is far from decided. Your money could go all the way down to zero. So don't invest money that you're not willing to completely lose at this point.
Yeah, it makes me think there's been like a lot of buzz surrounding marijuana stocks too recently, Matt. And it's not that some of those companies won't succeed, especially as more and more states legalize marijuana, but it's still an industry that's in its infancy. And it's going to be pretty volatile in the coming months and years. Some of those companies might go bust altogether in that time.
Yeah, it's like investing in Pan Am back in the early days of the airline.
Very similar. And two, we put this warning out there because it continues to be easier than ever to purchase crypto. You can now buy crypto like Bitcoin and Ethereum on Venmo. And Cash App has had this feature for a while now, but more and more users of those apps are being exposed to getting into the space and when they might be better served focusing on other areas of investing, like funding their tax advantaged accounts first, which Matt and I would always say, don't even get into crypto unless you're maxing out at minimum a Roth IRA, contributing to your workplace account.
Yes.
Like, you don't even, it doesn't even need to be on your radar before then. And there definitely seems to be potential in cryptocurrencies continuing to rise in value, but make sure that you're investing in the proper order and that you're limiting your portfolio exposure to cryptocurrency to a max of 5%. Like, crypto should be a very minor part of your overall investment holdings. It shouldn't be something that you're dedicating a whole lot of resources to.
So true, dude. All right. We've got several other stories that we're going to get to right after the break, including some transportation stories. We're going to talk about planes, no trains, but we are going to talk about automobiles. We'll get to all of those right after the break.
All right, here we go. Let's keep rolling with the Friday flight. And of course, Matt, the next thing we have to get to is the ludicrous headline
of the week.
There you go. I like that. You brought the zest to it today.
I was bringing like a, kind of opera singer vibe to it.
A little
time.
Pavarotti over there. I appreciate that. All right. Well, this week's headline comes from New York Magazine, and it goes, "Confessions of an Overnight Millionaire. I constantly ask myself, do I deserve this money?" And this is a really interesting read, Matt.
this was a crazy story.
I felt like part psychologist. I felt like
there's
a little bit of group therapy going on when I was reading this article. It was basically this anonymous author discussing her $6 million windfall as the company that she worked for went public recently. She admits that she's super frugal and doesn't even know how to begin incorporating a sum of money like this into her life. And in fact, she's having so much trouble with this life-changing sum of money that her dog's life has improved more than her own. Like, she's buying specialty dog food for her pup, but like for her, she can't seem to spend a penny on
it. Her dogs are getting like dental work done.
Yes. She's like, I refuse to go to the doctor, but
yes,
I'll take him.
Yeah. She said that her dogs have seen more doctors now this year than she has.
Yes. I thought it was super interesting, man. She actually ends up talking about how she struggles with the belief that she deserves this money at all, and even contemplates giving it back.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So yeah, we would say, please don't give it back. But I mean, that being said, I could totally see some guilt creeping in if, you know, a life-changing sum of money fell into my lap. But giving it back, we don't think that's the answer.
No.
It's funny. It kind of reminds me of some of the responses we saw to the stimulus money from folks who didn't lose their job. That money went out to a lot of Americans who are still gainfully employed, you know, some of which were doing better financially, depending on what industry they work in, how much money they had invested in the market, things like that. There was definitely some collective guilt going on, I think. But the answer, at least from our perspective here, is to, for her, for this individual, to wrestle with some of those deeper emotional issues that money can cause in your life. You know, those different unspoken beliefs that we have ingrained in ourselves, like, and not just like on the surface, but multiple layers deep. These are often what lead to a bad relationship with money that would cause someone to react to an event like this that way. But yeah, it was an interesting read. I mean, it was like a journal entry, or, you know, like, yeah. I mean, it was
like her private diary, serious? But for everyone to see.
Yeah, it was all over the place. And dude, one of the things that stood out to me was when she was kind of talking about her being frugal, she mentioned too that she's never been generous, but essentially she was kind of chronicling how like that can change a little bit. And I think something that's worth highlighting is that, like, I personally believe that money doesn't really change who we are, but it just amplifies the things that we're already doing with our money, right? And so just because she now has a lot of money, I don't think that's going to mean she's going to become this big time giver, unless there's maybe some other life, you know, massive life changing event that happens to her. She's probably going to continue, like she said, being frugal and not spending that money, because that's just not been her response to the money that she already had. I think it's an important reason why it's good to have a healthy relationship. It's good to have some of these foundational things figured out when it comes to money, regardless of how much money that you have now or how much, you know, you'll come into possession of in the future.
Yeah, I started kind of thinking after reading this article, what would my response be if I got $6 million randomly, you know, thrown into my bank account? And you know, I don't suspect that that's going to happen anytime soon, sadly. But I don't think that my life would change all that much if that money were deposited tomorrow.
But I'm guessing you wouldn't feel the desire to give it back.
No, right? I don't think I would. Yeah.
Assuming you came into possession of it legally.
Yeah. Hopefully. I just feel like that's such a good place to be with your money, though, where winning the lottery or getting a large sum of money wouldn't change things all that much. It would really just, I would amplify some of the things that I already enjoy in small little ways, but really my reaction to having that kind of money wouldn't change a whole lot of things about the way I currently live life. But obviously having that amount of money in the bank would provide some really helpful financial security. I'd hit financial independence overnight.
And maybe you would travel maybe a touch more. You've talked before how travel in your life is an important thing. So maybe you would see that ramp up a little bit.
That's probably true.
Yeah. Well, speaking of travel, our bud Scott Kies over at Scott's Cheap Flights, they put together an excellent list of the best and the worst airports for cheap flights. We'll make sure to link to it in our show notes. But the airports that offer the most heavily discounted flights are Denver, Austin, Minneapolis, Chicago, O'Hare, and LAX. Atlanta actually did crack the top 10 at spot number 9. I'm glad to see that we're in the running a little bit there. But Scott also points out which airports provide the least amount of deals for you to take advantage of.
We're looking at you, Peoria.
Peoria was the absolute worst. Essentially, with a small town like that, there's very little competition, and the flight demand isn't very flexible. I mean, people are going to fly in and out of there for the reasons that they need to fly in and out of there. It's, you know, right, like I assume for people living there who may be traveling for business. Not many people traveling there for fun. But when there's a singular airline there, there's no need to offer discounts.
Guarantee you we're going to get an email from the Peoria Chamber of Commerce this afternoon, and they're going to, you know, tout all the reasons people should visit there for
this
fun.
This episode is not brought to you by the Peoria Department of Travel. But this list was crazy helpful, though, because you don't necessarily have to fly out of the closest airport to you. If you can be a little more flexible with your travel plans, you can drive to a nearby airport in order to score a better deal. If you do have that flexibility, it could be well worth the effort.
I agree. And checking flight prices from a few of the airports nearest you is a great way to see if you can save money on the trip you're planning to take. Matt, for where we live, Atlanta did crack the top 10, but sometimes the better deals are even out of like Chattanooga's airport or Birmingham. And that can be a worthwhile hour and a half or 2-hour drive in order to score like a much cheaper flight somewhere. Especially, let's say I'm booking a flight for my whole family. But in addition to driving to a different airport, you can save money by booking multiple flights separately. So like, let's say you were trying to get to Hawaii from the East Coast. It might make sense to book a flight directly to LAX, a round trip from where you live or from a nearby airport, or maybe San Francisco even, and then book a separate flight to get to Hawaii from there. If you're not booking it all with one carrier, if you're splitting up your trip like that, you can save quite a bit more money on those flights.
That's true. And that actually might be a tactic I employ next year.
And the tactic I'm going to take to get that Hawaii cheap, even cheaper, is to hide in your suitcase.
we're still not going to be done with that, dude. let's talk about artificial intelligence, man. AI can make life easier in a lot of areas in our lives. Sometimes it makes it harder, but you can guarantee that any company that's looking to implement it is hoping to save money or even make some more money. For instance, we came across a story. When you're shopping online, virtually everything on Amazon, eBay, and other e-commerce sites now is an ad. Some folks are suggesting that ads might be Amazon's most profitable business venture as soon as this year. Dang, right? It's crazy that that's the case. And it's important to know that Amazon, they're making a good bit of money by feeding us things that will make them more money, not just because they're trying to create a better user experience. Essentially, for some folks, if they're able to find the things that they want easier, I guess it is an increase in user experience. But in the end, what they care about is money. You know, like this might be a kind of a pessimistic view towards online retailers. But when you see the amount of the screen, when you're looking at an item on Amazon, when you see the amount of screen that's dedicated towards ads or
like the heat map, essentially.
Oh, my gosh. It is insane at how many of those are ads, basically. And I actually went to Amazon and just pulled up a product. And seriously, like you look at it, and if you look closely, you'll see that it says sponsored.
Yep.
And you'll be shocked at how many times you see sponsored on there. All of those are ads for themselves, yep, for Amazon itself.
Companies are paying Amazon to get listed higher, and it's just important to know when you're shopping on there so you don't say, oh, this is a recommended item because I'm browsing at this. No, it's a paid for recommendation. And yeah, you might want to do a little more research on your own and maybe not just doing your research on Amazon's site. I forget what the percentage was, but it was something like 60% of product searches begin on Amazon now.
Yeah.
And so that means that those, you know, paid for ads on the Amazon site are going a long way towards influencing what we buy, our consumer behavior.
That's right.
All right, let's keep talking about artificial intelligence. There was another story that we saw this week that it's coming to the car repair industry. There was a Wired article which documented the rise in insurance companies using photography, photos to assess damage and repair costs instead of using a human adjuster. COVID has changed the way many of those insurers are handling claims these days. And yeah, pre-pandemic, only like something like 15% of car insurance claims were assessed using artificial intelligence. It was like a little more novel back then. But now it's closer to 60%. And many repair shops, they're not happy about it. One body shop owner said that 99.9% of the estimates coming in via the artificial estimate are dead wrong.
I'm not sure how scientific that 99.9 is. It might be slightly more anecdotal.
Yeah. It's probably not quite that many that are off. But like, you know, he doesn't really like the system.
Right,
and
right.
There are often problems underlying the issues that you see on the surface when your car gets into an accident, right? You can't diagnose every problem from a photo. And so what they're trying to point out is it's helpful new technology that might eventually at some point be ready for prime time. But right now it's highly flawed.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about what to do if you've gotten into a fender bender. So if you're with one of the big insurance companies out there, you might be directed to download their app where you can snap pictures, and artificial intelligence, AI, or appraisers will use that info, use those pictures to come up with an estimate for you. It's really quick. It's really easy. And dude, there are even some instances where folks have gotten money deposited into their bank account the next day. It's been that quick, like that immediate. And this sounds really amazing, right? But this can actually be really terrible if you're not compensated the proper amount to adequately fix your car. And so if you need to get an estimate for your damaged car, we would recommend that you request an in-person appraiser or an adjuster, or contact your insurance company and find a list of body shops that your insurance company approves of in order to ensure that you get enough money for that repair. You want to make sure that you're not left holding the bag when it comes to getting that repair done, where the actual repair costs more than what you're quoted and what the insurance company is going to send your way. And you definitely want to make sure, too, that your ride is repaired properly, because an inadequate payout from an insurance company might keep some different body shops out there from doing the proper work.
Yeah, and that could leave you in an unsafe car, which would not be good. So knowing about that problem and knowing how to address it if that pops up in your life, hopefully you don't get in an accident. But you know, if you do, you got to know that stuff. All right, Matt. And speaking of cars, we've actually got a really interesting conversation with Lee Ann Shattuck coming out on Monday. And she is a car expert. We're going to talk all about car repairs, buying a car, buying used, buying new, and how you do it and score the best deal. We'll talk about all that stuff on Monday's episode. But that's going to do it for this episode. If you want show notes and some of the links to the stories that we discussed in today's episode, just go to our website, howtomoney.com.
That's right. And if you've been listening to the show and you have not yet left us a review, we would greatly appreciate that. And you can head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you listen to your shows. Those positive, solid reviews help others to find the show and start doing smarter things with their money. And so a big thanks in advance for that. And so, Joel, that's going to be it for this episode, buddy. We hope everyone has a great weekend. And until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.